It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Phil. How are you?
Tamaria, Rachel. I'm good, thank you.
You enjoying New Zealand Music Month out there?
Yeah. And actually, we had, speaking of music, we had a tripartite alliance in Auckland, which is Guangzhou and Los Angeles, our sister cities, and we've got a three-way grouping, which has been really helpful in, you know, promoting trade and investment and marketing for our industries. But last night at the dinner function, they had Annie Crummer.
Dad,
Will. And I don't know how old Will is. He must be in his mid-70s. But he was up there doing his Cook Island dancing. And he was a real inspiration for all of the population that's getting to that age group.
Fantastic.
But they were great. And, that was just a little taste of Cook Island music for our American and Chinese visitors.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. Let's talk a little bit, though, about something a little bit less cheerful, sadly.
Yep.
And it's the homelessness issue that we've talked about a lot already, but the full report from the Auckland-wide point in time count was released on last week, and what I'm quite interested in is the call for more culturally appropriate responses that's come out of this, especially in relation to Māori homelessness in Auckland. Could you talk a little bit about that? What's happening with that, and how is the council responding to that?
Yeah, well, what the report, and this was a report that Auckland Council did in relation to Housing First. So we went out, actually, I was part of it. We went out from about 9:30 at night till 1:30 in the morning, just trying to get a physical count of people on the ground, living in cars, living without shelter, sleeping rough on the streets, living in temporary accommodation. And, you know, from that we estimated there were about 800 people living without shelter in Auckland and probably 2,800 that were in temporary accommodation. So what it did was it highlighted the size of the problem in Auckland. And what was of particular worry is that nearly 40% of those living in temporary accommodation were Māori. Now, that probably wasn't surprising, although maybe the magnitude of the figure was, because it reflects level of income and challenges in the housing field. I suppose the good thing is that when I look at the figures for the people that we're housing under our Housing First program, and we've so far in the first 22 months of it housed 922 adults and including families with children, that 57% of those that we're helping are Māori, 16% European, 22% Pacifica, and then 5% other. But what it demonstrates is that there is a particular problem in the Māori and Pacifica communities. They're the lowest income communities in Auckland, and they're suffering most from the phenomenon of homelessness. So Housing First, we're making a dent in that. We are helping disproportionately those groups who are most represented in the people sleeping rough, sleeping in cars, in emergency accommodation. And we're working with government to promote extra social housing, and the Minister of Housing has told me that there will be 3,500 extra state houses added in Auckland over the next 3 years, after years when, you know, state housing had been run down and not much was being done to help the homeless, to the extent we were spending literally millions of dollars putting people in motels because that was deemed to be the way that you had to respond. Well, we're not interested in motels, we're interested in providing people with permanent accommodation.
But what I'm kind of interested in, Phil, as well, is it's great that there is more housing being provided and from lots of different platforms, but this idea of if there are disproportionately Māori are being affected by homelessness, how can the council and the government as well be, I guess, approaching this in more of a kaupapa Māori way? How is that happening, and is that happening, or will it be happening? Because it seems to be that might be something that people are calling for. You know, people are wanting a bit more of a kaupapa Māori approach to Māori homelessness issues.
Yeah, and the way that we're doing that is working with Marae, so Te Puia Marae, Papakura Marae, Wātia. We are working quite closely with them in working with the people who are in the most difficult situations. In fact, I visited two of those Marae late last year just to have a look at some of the work that they are doing. And, you know, they provide a means of dealing with people who feel that their situation is better understood by people who are themselves Maori. So, you know, I think we have to work in that way. But in physical terms, what we've got to do, we've simply got to provide more accommodation that is affordable, particularly in the rental area, for our lowest income people, and they are disproportionately Maori and Pacifica. So we need to make sure that we've got the outreach to ensure we're getting to those communities, and the figures I gave you before indicates that we are connecting with those communities, because those are the communities that we're helping most with our Housing First program.
Right.
And you know how Housing First works. First of all, you can't solve a person's problems when they're sleeping rough. You've got to get them into a house. But once you've got them into a house, then you've got to address the problems that led them to being homeless. So that will often be mental illness, and that again, I think, is probably falling disproportionately on our Maori community, and also things like drug and alcohol addiction. So once you've got them in a house, make sure you've got a wraparound service so that they can stay in the house, because you're dealing with the problems that they're facing in their lives. And Housing First has been remarkably successful. You know, a year out from housing somebody, 85% of them are still in that accommodation, and these are people in the most dreadful housing situations.
All right, well, thank you. That's I'm sure this will be a conversation that we'll keep coming back to, because it's a massive topic as well. But let's talk about youth voting, which is being rolled out in Auckland schools. I'm quite interested in Ngā Pōtea Taiohi, or I've probably said that Taiohi, my bad, youth voting program, which has been run by Auckland Council. It seems really interesting. So it's a free initiative that teaches students aged between 11 and 15 about local government and the importance of elections. Could you talk about that a little bit, Phil?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on it by any means, but what's really important, you know, we look at central government, and while voting turnouts have been declining, it's still up around 80%. In local government, you know, you're lucky to get 35 to 40% of people turning out. So, you know, how do you address that particular problem? Well, I don't think there's a silver bullet answer, but one of the answers has got to be to try to work with our kids in the schools so that they understand what local government does, because, you know, when I visit schools, people don't have much of an idea of what local government does. And also to emphasise to them that, you know, this is about their future, their city, and they need to be ready to participate in the decisions about who is going to take them forward. So I think, you know, reaching out into the schools, and it's not, you know, in a, schools are often resistant to having candidates come into the schools, and I understand why that is, although don't necessarily agree with it. I think it's good that kids are exposed to, you know, a bit of debate and how a democracy works. But trying to get a better understanding of what our role as citizens in a democratic society is, so that we can make a difference, we can determine who we're going to put in positions of authority, what we need to do, what we need to understand about, you know, what they represent, you know, that voting is about different policies and different approaches, but it's also about people in whom you can place, you know, your trust, because you feel that they are people of integrity. I think it's just bringing that reality of being a citizen and your rights and your responsibilities of citizenship into the schools. And years ago we used to have civics classes. I don't think they were particularly successful, and maybe we've got to try to bring into the schools, and it's not just for local government, it's but for central government as well, a better understanding by the kids in the school about how the system actually works in practice. And then, you know, give them some simulation exercises so that they know what an election is about. Even if they're electing somebody, you know, to their school council, this is what we do in a democracy. People at the top don't tell us what to do, but we have the power to determine who are the people that will represent us.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, while we need to do a whole lot more of that, and a lot of it needs to be, you know, not just once every 3 years when the local election comes up, but I think, you know, I must have this discussion with the Minister of Education, what we can do more to bring to life what living in a democracy means. And that includes for our new migrant populations too, because sometimes they come from countries where there is no tradition of voting.
All right, well, thank you, Phil. Thanks for your time this morning. We'll chat to you next week.
Okay, always a pleasure.
Cool.
Thanks, Rachel.
Cheers,
catch
bye.
You later. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goth. Yep.